Today, more from the property market frontline. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today, I'm very pleased to welcome a new guest onto the DFA channel. Hello, good to see you.
Thanks for having me on, Martin. Lovely meeting you for the first time face-to-face, met online, and love your posts.
Great. Well, why don't you introduce yourself? Because people may or may not recognise you. You run your own channel, your own videos and everything else, but people may not know. So who are you?
Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants. And I've been an industry commentator for many years now. Some might say that I'm also an industry activist and a rebel in other parts of the world.
Rebel is good. Give a bit of background. So you're based in Sydney?
That's right.
Okay. And so your property exposure sort of field of view is what? Sydney and the surrounding area?
Sydney, the greater metropolitan area. Over the years, I've worked with many developers, landowners, and I've been in selling and property and managing property in the industry for approximately 15, 17 years now. I have ventured out in selling properties in Queensland. There was a time earlier in my real estate career. I've also been involved in buying and selling property, renovating. So I've got a fairly good grasp and a good cross-section of understanding as to what the property market is doing from, let's say, from putting together development sites to construction, selling your what we'd call your established homes, also property management right across Sydney. So it's given myself a good perspective of what's happening on the ground. Also involved with State Agents Cooperative, where we get a lot of data from various members across New South Wales.
Okay, great. Well, it's really good to have you with us, and we'll put links to your site and everything down below so people can actually go and have a look there. So I think we're at a very interesting point in the property cycle, and you know that I'm relatively bearish on property at the moment. So come clean, where are you? Are you bullish or are you bearish on property?
Very much bearish. I really and honestly believe that we are going to go back to 2004. 2005 prices in a lot of areas. I've been calling this this market, I've been calling the oversupply that many have been saying that there's been an undersupply for the last 7-8 years. Because of my involvement with developments, Martin, I've been able to see and I've been able to talk to a lot of big developers in Sydney where I've seen, you know, development sites for up to 2,000 apartments. I've looked at the plans. I've looked at the proposals. I've talked to the various developers involved in these developments. So over the years, I've been basically warning people that we're going to come to a time where there's going to be a huge oversupply, and we have. I've been calling this market for the last 5 years. But a lot of people, as you know, they take our commentary at face value, and they look around and say, well, we don't see it. But by the time a development application goes through the process, goes through council, and it's completed, it's anywhere between 3 and 4, even some cases, 5 years. So although I was talking about it 4 or 5 years ago, I wasn't saying that they're just going to pop up like mushrooms overnight. It's going to take time. And then you've got other factors that have delayed some of the commentary that I've made in terms of my predictions with regards to rental prices going down. Or because I also talked to a lot of marketing companies, and I was very much aware of the rental guarantees. Now, the original rental guarantees that I saw that were being given as part of the purchase price in a lot of these overly constructed areas, which, you know, properties that were being sold to the overseas contingencies. I was of the understanding that the rental guarantees only were carried for 2 years. In some cases now, I've been finding out that the rental guarantees are carrying for 3 years, 3.5 years. They've stretched them out in order to appease the people that have bought these properties. So yeah, I'm very much bearish, and I think the general public need to become well aware of the fact that I'm calling 204, 205 prices all over again.
Okay, that's very interesting. And I think on the development front, I've spoken to a number of developers in the last month or so, right? And I've got three messages coming up. The first is they're having great difficulty shifting the stuff that's being built at the moment. Yeah. So they can't sell them off the plans. They're actually finding it really tough to get people to buy them. They're having to discount very heavily. They are, in some cases, now considering renting those properties out rather than trying to sell them at the moment, hoping that things will improve. And they're not buying any more land. So effectively, what they're saying is, we don't see that we're going to be able to invest in new developments down the track.
I guess opening that up into a number of areas. The first area is, I truly believe that we have close to 120,000, 140,000 dwellings that are vacant in the East Coast, right? So we could attribute most of them to be owned by overseas investors that have just parked their money here in Australia. Our government being complicit or not, that's another question for another blog. The banks being complicit or not, again, that's another question for another blog. So keep these numbers in mind, 120,000 dwellings, right? Then we've got possibly 70 to 80,000 properties currently under construction that are yet to hit the market, in other words, under construction. And then we've got a further 120 to 150,000
In the works.
Yeah, through the de-application. Yep. So as far as I'm concerned, we've got an oversupply for the next 7 or 8 years.
Yeah. So if you put them around numbers, I reckon there's about 200,000 more coming on stream over the next 1 to 2 years, right? And migration, net migration's around 280,000.
Let me solve you there.
Yep.
I haven't come across any migrant to date that has come into the country with $300,000 or $400,000 in the back pocket.
Right.
Then you can proceed.
No, absolutely, because I was going to ask the question, right? Because the standard argument always is, but isn't migration blotting up all of the spare capacity, right? You've made the first point, but actually a lot of people who come into Australia don't have the wherewithal to buy. They might go into the rental sector, but not buy. And the second point, I guess, there is that if you look at it, the whole question of the mix of property that they could buy anyway, right, relative to what's available is also another factor. And interestingly, the ABS data that shows the number of people per property, right, has not changed in 20 years. And so if there was an undersupply of property, you'd expect that number to go up, but it's not. So I think the whole question of supply going to save us is not true.
No, not at all. We know that a lot of the migrants that are coming into the country are going to be renting. Okay. So I get a lot of rental data, and I've been putting this out more so over the last 12 months. And I've been noticing a growth, a pattern, particularly in the last 6 or 8 months, where the monthly new rental listings coming on to the market, that's new, not existing, has been around about the 15,000, 16,000 properties on a regular basis. Yes, some get taken out, but there are new ones that are coming on. Mm. And that's been growing steadily over the last 6-7 months. Because of the data that I obtained from approximately 150, 170 real estate agencies, all the sources that we gather our data from, we get on the ground data. Live data, real data, not data that's 3 months old or 3 to 6 months old in some cases for the ABS, for our friends at CoreLogic can put together, and then the mainstream analysts can go out there and do the, position the numbers whichever way they want to tell the story. Real data has been telling us for the last three years that there's been a growth in rental vacancies, And real data has been telling us for the last 2 years that there's also been an upside in the vacancy rates. So when you have 6, 7, 8, and in some cases 9 weeks of properties being vacant for 9 weeks, that's alarming. So where is all this undersupply? Where the migrants here, they're coming in, but they're still absorbing the existing property. So why has that been growing? And it's only in the last, over the last 6 months, that the mainstream have picked this up.
Yes.
I've been calling it for the last 2 years.
Yeah. Well, indeed. What's fascinating there is that if you think about it, rental is more associated with income growth than property price growth, right? And the fact is that people haven't got a growth in their income, so they're not able to pay more rent. And the other interesting thing is, of course, the banks now are required not to take 100% of rental flows when they do a mortgage calculation. They're having to assume now some vacancy that they have to take a haircut at 80%, right? That's new. That's quite new. That, of course, is one of the reasons why your ability to borrow is lower as well. So this whole rental sector, right, and the fact that a lot of the data that's out there is not giving us the true picture, I think is a really, really important message.
Look, it has been, but it fails. There are so many barriers or stopples that we've come across. Because, I mean, look, I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist as well.
You know? And we sort you of and John Adams will get on really well.
And you sort of wonder what's the reasoning, why? But it's obvious. It's an economy. It's a state, national economy, all based around construction so far. So New South Wales and Victoria, you could say is being the saving grace. All the stamp duty money's coming in, and now there's been a slowdown of purchases. Mm. But you know what? In a downward market, people are still going to buy. Mm. The revenues aren't going to be as much revenue there for the state government because based on sale prices and stamp duty and so forth, but just going back one step, Martin, this is where I was leading to before, and that is we have close to 240, as you were talking about, like go say 200,000 properties that are sitting vacant, dormant, or about to surface in the next few years. All we need out of those is not 20%, not 10%, less than or around about 5% to come onto the sales side of the market, the resale side of the market, and we've got what John says, Armageddon.
Mm. Yeah, it's incremental. It doesn't have to be the whole lot, right? Yeah. So one of the other interesting questions is auction rates, right? And there's a lot of sort of noise in the auction numbers, and of course everybody quotes the percentage and our clearance rate, which I don't think necessarily tells the full story. So what's your perspective on the whole auction numbers question?
There's a lot of noise, but no rhythm. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely, it's just noise, it's just hype. For over a year, I've been questioning, actually close to 2 years, I've been questioning some of my colleagues in the mainstream that put out all this, look at us, how wonderful the auction clearing rates have done this, have done that. But they failed to see the underlying factor, and that is the reduction in properties actually going to market. Mm. But yet they failed to see the increase of properties actually open for inspection.
Yep.
For the open homes.
Right. And you told me an amazing number just before we started, which was what, 15,000?
Close to 15,000.
Right.
In Sydney on average, week in, week out for the last few months.
Right. So what we're seeing then is increased numbers of people trying to sell, right? But a much lower number of people actually successfully selling.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And a much lower number of people, there's a shift. Now, there's a shift because let's add another factor into this to get a better picture of what's happening with auction clearing rates. My belief and my understanding with regard to the numbers, even from 3-4 years ago, It wasn't because a property needed to go to auction or you needed to take the property to auction as a real estate agent. Okay. There are a number of underlying factors that you take into account when you're taking a property to auction.
Right.
Right? And right now, you know, we don't have the such, you know, huge climb in property prices on a month-in-month-out basis. Mm. So we're on a downward trend. There's a lot of pressure and we're on a downward trend.
Yeah.
So that takes that sense of, oh, but we don't know what the emotional side of things, what the public's going to pay for it, so therefore we'll go to auction and we'll just, you know, focus on the on people's emotion rather than the logic. And that. So if that is one of the reasons why you take a property to auction, why are real estate agents taking property to auction right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because we got the reverse.
Yep.
People are fearful. So therefore, you shouldn't be. But one of the main reasons why we got auction still agents still persisting on taking properties to auction, Martin, is because of the vendor paid advertising they get up front.
Right. Okay.
Because that's what's running their business.
So it's the economic model of the agency structure.
Exactly.
That's creating the momentum that's still there.
Yes.
A lot lower. So in other words, there are lots of people who are still paying dollars across to run the programs, to run the advertising, because that's a revenue stream for them.
On a failed auction or on a successful auction,
right.
You still paid the vendor paid advertising. The only difference is on a successful auction, you paid the commission on settlement.
Right.
On a failed auction, the agent doesn't get the commission, but they've got the vendor paid advertising up front, the VPA.
Yeah.
And that could be in some instances that's 50, 60, 70% of the overall revenue that the agent gets. Now, so we've got this for the last 7 years, particularly in the last 4 years, we've had this massive drive for agents to take property to auction, and hence the reason the numbers just grew, and now they're shrinking back because vendors are a lot wiser, because the internet has leveled out a lot of people are more educated, you could say. I've always said this in my blogs and in my posts. So if OFT or the regulators or our industry bodies, you know, force the agents and the agencies to put another clause at the bottom of our agency agreement to say that should a private treaty sale or an auction by or an auction sale by auction, should it fail, the agent is to give back the vendor paid advertising. I can guarantee you that we would have less than 50%, even the amount of auctions that we're having right now.
Right, okay. Very interesting. So there's an economic driver that perhaps is not visible to a lot of people. And I guess the other point is that we know that time on book, as it were, is going up significantly, right? We know that the number of properties listed is continuing at a very strong rate. And we know that the number of sales are significantly down, right? And we also know from the ABS that the settlements are also, the settlement count, which is the end of the process. And I know that's noisy data, but is still down as well. So you can begin to understand what is the DNA of why prices are going down, right?
Exactly.
And the interesting question is, are any of those likely to reverse anytime soon?
I don't believe any of those are going to reverse anytime soon, because we still have the 120,000 dwellings that are vacant.
Yep.
So for me, that's like we are sitting on a hand grenade.
Yep.
We don't know when it's going to go off.
Yep.
Because all it takes is something to happen overseas for these overseas investors to decide, hold on a minute, I'll take 70% of what I paid for that property right now, I'll forego 30%, I'll forego 40%, I'll even forego 50% as long as I get something out of it. That's going to set a panic. We don't need 120,000 properties in Sydney to come on the market to flood the market. We're already somewhat, the pool is already overflowing in some areas. So all we need is, for example, in the Blacktown LGA, all we need is another 50 to 70 properties and we'll see property prices retract another 5, 6, 10% overnight. So, and this is what a lot of people don't understand, Martin, is the fact that We don't need a lot more property to come on the market to create that instability. Yep. So that's one hand grenade. The second hand grenade is the interest-only, what I call the interest-only investors. So these interest-only investors that have got to go from interest-only to principal and interest, that's another hand grenade that we're sitting on. Yep. We don't know when panic buttons. I know my colleagues, my industry colleagues and associates that I talk to on a daily basis, they tell me what they're having to go through in order to get people refinanced. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of my industry colleagues that one in particular I was talking to last week. He said, Edwin, I've got, my office has 24 listings on its books. And said, 13 of those are investor owned. I just went and spoke to five people that want to sell their properties. And guess what? And he said, all of them, their investment properties. So they're offline because why? They can't refinance. So that's a second grenade.
And just on that, 40% of refinancings, according to my data, are now not happening. In other words, 40% are being rejected by the banks. A year ago, it was 5%. And a lot of those are those interest-only loans.
But,
right?
but there is a saving grace, Martin. Mm-hmm. According to some of my mainstream colleagues, there's a saving grace. You can go to the second and tier banks, and you can even go to mezzanine funding, or you can do all these sorts of wonderful things.
Just pass the risk.
Exactly. Yeah. But you know, all that's doing is just continuously fueling the fire. Mm. So I still don't. I was expecting the panic, what I call the investor only panic, to start showing in our figures at the beginning of this month, but. Everybody's trying to still juggling. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happened is that a lot of people have been waiting for the miracle, and the miracle being spring. Yes. So, and what happens is I've explained to a number of people that I've spoken to, I said, look, okay, so a lot of people waited through the winter, and now they're waiting for the spring. So obviously by the time an agent sees a property, particularly if it's not managed by the same agency, it could take 2 to 3 weeks for that property to come online anyway. So I would say we're going to start seeing a lot more investor-only listings from vendors that are interest-only coming on the market. And that's going to set off another time bomb as well. Yeah. And then I also have another grenade that we're sitting on, and that is the savvy investor. Uh-huh. The savvy investors that have, you know what, they've said, we've peaked, it's peaked. We bought it for 400,000. The agents have told us it's now worth 600. At 400, we were getting $500 a week. At 600,000, now they're asking for a drop in the rental price to 470. It just doesn't make sense. Let's get out. Yep. Let's just sell. Capitalize on what we made. Let's put our money elsewhere. Mm. So you've got three potential grenades that are about to go off. And then you mentioned earlier on that in your discussions with developers that they don't have any new buyers. The local people aren't buying because not only because of the price point, but because a lot of these developments are under-engineered, as far as I'm concerned. In other words, they're going to have major issues in the future. Mm. But what I'm seeing, and what I'm invited to, are meetings where entire block of units have people, what I call the Houdini investors, have walked away from their 10% deposits, and now they're going to go back on the market. Mm. Two problems that arise from that. The first one is they're no longer new. They're no longer new, but they're not considered to be first-hand a transfer of title firsthand. So that we've got a second transfer of title. So therefore, they can't be sold to overseas investors anymore. They've got to be sold to the local market. The local market will not absorb them unless they get a 30, 40% discount.
Right.
So we've got 2 weeks ago, I was invited to a meeting where there was a block of units. I won't say exactly where it was. 60 investors. Yeah, it's a block of 60. All 60 have walked away. Yep. Not five, not six, not all 60 have walked away. And the developer now is looking for an alternate. I said, take 30% off and we could help you. But other than that, what's their alternative? They don't have another alternative.
And I'm seeing that also in Brisbane and Melbourne, by the way, because I get national data. And so very similar things going on there, where effectively you've got all of those properties that effectively were sold off the plan, 10%, you know, and now they're struggling because people are walking away. And by the way, the banks are also now insisting on new valuations, right? And those valuations are coming a lot lower, so they can't get the mortgage. So it's all part of this same fabric of tightening of credit and, you know, prices sliding. So if you put all of this together, you know, you said we could be back at 2004 level. I just want to sort of come to that point. So you're looking at prices how much down from where they are now?
Another 20%.
Okay, right. And in Sydney, 20, we've already
20, 30%.
Come. We've perhaps come down 8, 9, 10% already from the top.
Well, yeah, look, in as an overall average. But when you look at, again, I'd say the Blacktown LGA, I call that the canary in the coal mine. Okay. And a lot of people fail to see this. It has been the canary in the coal mine for the last two property downturns. And I believe this is, it stands out a lot more now. But people aren't, for some reason, they're not looking at it as closely as what I have been. I've seen, Martin, in some parts of the Blacktown LGA, we're already down 20-22%.
Yep.
So when I say another 20%, I'm talking about from that point.
Okay.
So 40% in a lot of areas is going to be common.
Yeah, and you know that I got hauled over the coals after my 60 Minutes program when I said, well, the worst case could be 40%, right? And yeah, in fact, if you look carefully, there are other people also saying that is not out of the whack. So
yeah, when you called the worst case scenario 40%, I felt like tweeting out to you and saying you got rocks in your head, Martin. Yeah, I think you've been generous.
Yeah, okay, too optimistic. You see, John Adams is saying 80%. So yeah, okay. So it's pretty serious. There are so many negative indicators, right? And I guess the other question then is, well, but a lot of the property sector says, well, but won't the government intervene? So won't they get via the RBA, cut interest rates? Won't they offer more homeowner grants? Won't they do all the things they did previously? What's your
let's take one of those at a time.
Yeah.
Interest rates drop further. Mm. Well, How much is that really going to influence where the banks are getting the money from? Oh. The RBA aren't providing the banks with the money.
Yeah.
For one. Yeah. Secondly, my understanding, if interest rates go down, everything else is going to cost a lot more for us to buy. Petrol, that's going to go through the roof. The Aussie dollar is going to go through the floor.
Yep. So import inflation.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think the RBA are better off staying where they are and just not going up or down, because damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yes.
They've created this, they've got no way out, they've created an impasse for themselves, they've got no way out. Either they've got to do something.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
The sooner they do it, the sooner we know which way whether we're gonna wear a hard hat or whether we're gonna go full bunker down. Yep. into to take shelter.
Yep.
That's with regard to the interest rate. Now, in respect to your second point was
owner grant. First
okay,
owner
first
grant.
Time government stimulus.
Mm.
I think, I don't know about you, but I think the state government have already overspent on football fields, because that's what we really need.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So I don't think we can build any more football fields to create jobs, to give people more of an income to... No. Right. just being facetious. I don't think there's any money in the kitty to do to for any grants. All they could do is they could open the our borders for international investment.
Yep.
But what's that going to do? I dare say, Martin, that even if they did, I think we've got to give our neighbouring countries a lot more credit than what we are.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, let's say we open up the policy for them to buy even the secondary stock, even the established properties.
No.
My question is, would they really? One, the banks aren't going to lend them the money. So would you park $200,000 of your money knowing that in 6 months' time it's only going to be valued $100,000?
Yep.
There are other nations around the world that are springing up in the... I just came back from Vietnam. I parked my money there for the next 5 years.
Yep.
It's a growing economy. There's a lot of growth. I believe that other nations, if they could, they just pull their money out, but they can't. They're stuck.
Yep.
And that's why a lot of them are going to be walking away from their deposits.
So effectively, you know, the conclusion is it looks pretty negative. There isn't much that can be done about it. I mean, we sort of backed ourselves into a corner with ultra-low interest rates, very free lending, that's all tightening. We know that the international situation is now different from where it was, particularly because there's no capital growth, and that means the international investors are less likely to come in. And we know that there is still some local buying and selling going on, and that will continue, but at a much lower rate than we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. And you put all that together, and the inevitable conclusion is that prices are going to fall further.
Very much, and that's without, as I was saying, alluding earlier on, without those hand grenades going off.
Yep. So then we get the international situation, you know, the US begins to wobble and the corporate defaults rise, or we get something political up in Europe or whatever, right? So we are in a rather precarious position at the moment. And my own view, and I think you're probably reflecting it too, is that really, we've got to wake up and understand that we're in a new situation than we were even a year ago.
Very much so. And I think this is where a lot of my colleagues have failed to understand my posts. My posts, albeit they get called negative, your posts get called negative, you know, we're the doomsayers. You know, it's our fault that all this is happening, by the way, according to some accountants that I've...
If nobody talks about it, it's not going to happen, right?
Exactly, exactly. But because I talk about it too much, apparently it has happened. So, you know, if I talk enough that I'm going to have blue eyes next year, I'll get blue eyes. Hey? Yes. But with all this, what a number of us have been doing, Martin, has been informing the public of what's to come.
Yeah.
Now, quite a number of my clients over the last 2 years have taken my advice. They have cashed out. One particular one, he often sends me posts of what's happening where I sold his property. I sold a two-bedroom apartment in Cronulla for him for $720,000. Superior property to his is now on the market at 610. Superior property. He didn't have a balcony. Apartments closer to the beach. Bigger in internal square meterage, with a balcony. With renovated bathrooms, renovated kitchens. Is selling for 15% less than what he sold out for 12 months ago. Only 12 months ago. As I said, I sell property all around Sydney. I know a lot of agents are all around Sydney, and hence the reason why I gather all this information. And I look at, again, going back to the Blacktown LGA, where homes there that our offer sold 12 months ago again for 750,000. Now, superior property with an extra dwelling, a granny flat, an income source, with access to the rear yard, obviously, with garages and the like. Again, $100,000, $120,000 less than what we sold inferior property 12 months ago.
Yeah.
So that's where it's all going. So our clients that have taken our advice got out, some got out a lot earlier than others. But the thing is, in another 6-12 months, if they wanted to, I won't advise them to, but if they wanted to, they could come back in and buy something a lot better, a lot bigger. Unfortunately, our industry has labelled us as doomsayers, but it's all playing out. It's all playing out and I think timing. We don't have controls of what the government do, the stimulus that they provide. As I said earlier on, even with developers, I thought it was 2-year rental guarantees, because that's what the contracts that I did see had, 2-year rental guarantees. And then now I've seen one surface with 3 years and 4-year rental guarantees. So all this is just my advice to a lot of people out there, our audience, is if you're going to sell, if you have to sell, get on a lot quicker than what you than what you can.
Yeah. Look, I really appreciate your time, and it's been really interesting. Thank you very much for spending some time with us. And perhaps we should check back in 6 months and see how the trajectory is going, because you and I both have the similar view. And it's interesting that somebody absolutely entrenched inside the property sector is actually saying the same stuff. Right. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Great. So there you have it. Another perspective from inside the property market, and another reason why perhaps we should be very cautious and careful about the property sector. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.